from the National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
The Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C. blessed the Trinity Dome Mosaic, completing an architectural dream from the Basilica's founding. And earlier this week, Pope Francis returned to Rome from an apostolic visit to Myanmar and Bangladesh. Edward Penton traveled with the papal entourage and joins us today with impressions from the trip. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register senior editor.
On the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, December 8th, Cardinal Donald Wuerl, Archbishop of the Archdiocese of Washington, was beaming with joy to have concluded the colossal project of the new Trinity Dome. Later in the show, art historian Jem Sullivan will bring us details about the mosaic, but first, Edward Penton joins us from Rome to talk about the trip to Asia. Hi, Edward.
Hi, Jeanette.
So you returned from Myanmar and Bangladesh to Rome earlier this week, but I want to go back to the beginning of that trip, the papal flight. It was an exciting papal flight for you. Why?
Yes, well, it was a nice chance to give the Holy Father a copy of the 90th special edition of the Register. And so I just wanted to present it to him. He was very happy to receive it. I don't know if he read it, but he certainly took it away with him. And it was a good opportunity to bring the Register to his attention. I'm not sure if he was aware of it or how much he's known of it, but it was a nice opportunity.
It yielded some great photographs. We were pleased to put those in the print edition as well as on your blog online. So I'm so glad that you had the thought to give that to him. We've certainly been celebrating this year and you're more than 15 years with the Register, so you are certainly a very able representative to show the Register to the Holy Father. So thank you for doing that, Edward. Edward, it was a very interesting trip. It was a historic trip. It was the Holy Father's first time in Myanmar, which is also called Burma, and that's what we decided to use in our press coverage. It was the first time a pontiff has been there to that country.
That's right. Yes, it was very historic, and the first time, of course, that a papal mass had been celebrated there. So there's quite a few firsts for the visit, but also very significant because of the fact that the dictatorship is now, it's coming out of a six-decade dictatorship and sort of new beginnings for the country. So it was quite timely on that score, but also because of the Rohingya crisis, these 600,000 Muslim refugees who've had to flee the border of Burma into Bangladesh because of a military crackdown by the Burmese military. And the Pope really wanted to draw attention to their plight and their suffering. He's very keen on migration and migrants and the issue of refugees, and this was very close to his heart.
Now, this was an area that was intended to get some controversy. That's what people predicted. Did it turn out very controversial? What was the feeling there on the ground as you covered it in person?
Well, the big question, and it was rather whipped up really by the media, but the big question was whether he would mention the word Rohingya, because it is a taboo word in Burma. But most of the people there don't really want them in the country. They see them as a bit of a menace, really. A lot of people say unfairly, because they consider themselves stateless. The Burmese think they belong in Bangladesh. The Bangladesh believe they don't belong there. So they're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and they don't really have any belonging anywhere. And to use the word Rohingya would have been incendiary, because most people in Burma don't really, as I say, they don't want them there, but they also consider them to be not really part of the Burma's country, and they see them perhaps as Islamists and a threat to stability in the country. So he didn't mention it there because of these sensitivities. That brought a lot of criticism from human rights groups, especially because the UN had said they'd been basically victims of ethnic cleansing because of this military crackdown, which happened in August. But the Pope didn't mention it there, but he did once he was out of the country in Bangladesh, where it was safer and less sensitive and less likely to cause a big a blowback against him, or against the Rohingya as well, he mentioned it in Bangladesh instead.
Pope Francis faced not just criticism over the failure to mention a name, but when he arrived in Bangladesh, Edward, it presents a very different religious right situation from Burma, doesn't it?
Yes. Do you mean in terms of religious freedom?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, it is, because religious freedom is quite problematic in Burma, and although the Christian population is very small there, they don't have great religious freedom rights in the country. But by contrast, in Bangladesh, which is a Muslim majority country, as opposed to Burma, which is a Buddhist majority country, there is actually surprisingly a lot of religious freedom there, at least relatively so. And most Christians, there's only 700,000 in Bangladesh, but they live pretty much peacefully and without much interfering from the state. So it is an interesting contrast, yes.
What's the significance of two countries being visited by the Pope with such tiny Catholic populations, but that also have cardinals that were named at one point by Pope Francis?
Yeah, well, it's very much in continuity with, or consistent with, the Pope's going to the peripheries. And these are two countries very much on the periphery. And the Christian minority, though they're very small, they're no less significant and important. And I think the Pope really wanted to encourage them and to give them and to help them in their faith in this, in their countries where they are such a small minority. And but it really was a trip to the periphery. And as I say, no Pope has been to Burma, and so it was really perhaps quite significant and apt that this Pope Francis, who was all about going to the periphery, went to these countries.
So I'm going to ask you a more personal question, because I'm sure, I'm guessing it was the first time that you were in these two countries. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I've never been that far east.
So tell me your own impressions.
Well, it was certainly, I think the thing that struck me most, although I was kind of expecting it, is the poverty there. I mean, the poverty in Bangladesh was more than in Burma, surprisingly, because despite Burma having been under dictatorship for six decades, Bangladesh, certainly Dhaka, there's a lot of poverty. It's not far, of course, from Calcutta, where Mother Teresa was for much of her life. And so it's similar sort of poverty there. It's an enormous city with which is really struggling, but it's but there are signs of hope, as the Pope mentioned, in both countries, and he feels that there are sort of shoots of hope in terms of the Burma, especially coming out of a dictatorship, and his whole visit was about reconciliation and peace, and trying to put the past behind them and to really move forward and be reconciled and forgive each other.
And that's right. And on this past Wednesday at his papal audience, he took the opportunity to talk about his meeting with the youth of those two countries. And he said that was a sign of hope. So I do think he ended this trip with a hopeful message for that part of Asia. Now, you went from sweltering heat to Rome winter. And now we kind of turn to that Advent season that we're in now, and what's going on in Rome for Advent, and then the Pope's projected Christmas schedule.
Yes, well, it's pretty much as it usually is. It's very intense. He's got the midnight mass on Christmas Eve at 9:30. It's actually obviously earlier than midnight. Then he'll be giving his Orbi et Orbi blessing. That will be followed by he'll be having a general audience, and then of course there's the Te Deum, where he gives thanksgiving on New Year's Eve, and then the World Day of Peace message on New Year's Day, which this year will be on the theme of migrants. The theme actually is migrants and migrants and refugees, men and women in search of peace. Again, it's very much a great concern to the Pope, this issue of migration and refugees.
Absolutely. Now, just turning back to a current event this week, there were two new Episcopal appointments, and that is in Paris and Mexico City. Who were they, and what's the significance of these two appointments?
Yes, these are two big appointments. Paris, of course, is a very big metropolitan diocese. Archbishop Cardinal André Vantois has been there for, I think, over 10 years, and he is retiring on grounds of age. He's 75 now, and he will be replaced by Archbishop Michel Aupetit, who is currently the Archbishop of Nanterre, which is a suburb of Paris. But he's well-regarded and seen as someone who is very good on bioethics, good on the pro-life issues. He's well-respected among the pro-life organizations in France. And I think people are very happy about this appointment. He's 66 years old, so relatively young. And he'll be, I think he's being welcomed by a lot of Catholics in France. In Mexico City, the new cardinal is a cardinal from, I can't actually pronounce the name, but it's a suburb north of Mexico City. And Cardinal Aguiar Oretes is going to be the new cardinal there, the new archbishop. It's the biggest diocese in the world of 7 million people. So it's a big, responsible, high, it's going to be a big task for this new archbishop, because it is such a big diocese, and it's one of the biggest, most significant sees in the world. So it's an interesting appointment. I think he's been kind of a rising star in the Episcopate of Mexico. He's been president of the Bishop's Conference and held various senior positions as bishop and cardinal.
Well, we have something to look out for. So, Edward, thanks again for your reporting. We really do appreciate all the attention to the details you give us.
Okay. Thanks, Janet.
When we come back, Jem Sullivan, who specializes in sacred art, joins us as we turn our attention to the Trinity Dome at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception. This is Register Radio on EWTN.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter, and I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
This is Dan Burke, host of Divine Intimacy Radio. Jesus Christ, God made flesh, was born among us to redeem us, to befriend us, and to lead us to heaven. Don't let Advent or Christmas pass you by without taking time to reflect on the greatest gift ever given to mankind, ever given to you. God's blessings to you and yours this Advent and Christmas from Divine Intimacy Radio and the entire EWTN family.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, and I'm joined by Matthew Bunsen, my co-host here on Register Radio. Also joining us is Jem Sullivan, a wife, mother, author, and educator who serves as the Secretary for Education in the Archdiocese of Washington. Jem has been a frequent guest on EWTN and has hosted the EWTN special, The Beauty of Faith. Matthew spoke to Jem about her Register column entitled Majestic Mosaic, Trinity Dome at Mary's Shrine Offers an Encounter with Beauty.
Well, Dr. Sullivan, first, thank you for the gift of your time today. I know this has been a very busy time as the Basilica has worked on completing this extraordinary mosaic.
You're most welcome, Dr. Bunsen. I'm delighted to be here. and just to share with our viewers some of the excitement and the beauty, really, of the faith as it's being expressed in the mosaics of the Trinity Dome.
Well, this is, as you wrote in your piece for the National Catholic Register, one of the largest mosaic installations in the world. It features, get this, 14 million pieces of Venetian glass in more than 1,000 color variations in 18,300 square feet of the dome surface. This sounds truly extraordinary.
It truly is. And, you know, those numbers only kind of give you a small sense of really the magnificent beauty of this Trinity Dome mosaic in the Basilica of the National Shrine. The numbers, sure, are impressive, but what's more impressive really is the beauty radiating out of these mosaics, really lifting us up into a heavenly realm, as it were, as we see the Most Holy Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, as we see the Blessed Mother of God, as we see this procession of angels and saints, we are truly being lifted up into a heavenly realm and called to friendship, fellowship with God. That is the whole point of the Christian life.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's remarkable, too, that this is kind of the crowning achievement in some ways of what has been a century-long story of pretty remarkable achievements with this basilica.
That's correct. You know, the work for the basilica, the laying of its foundation, a stone, really began in 1920, September 23rd, 1920. Cardinal Gibbons laid the foundation stone. And then, you know, there were several years of construction interrupted, of course, by the Great Depression and then World War II. But the continued support and generosity of Catholics from around the country really helped to make this a reality. That construction continued after the war, and now we have the completion, as it were, as you mentioned, the completion of this really a century in the making, this magnificent Trinity Dome.
And the place of a mosaic like this in the dome of a church, a shrine that is dedicated to the Immaculate Conception, that itself has such a long-standing history and legacy with American Catholicism. Could you explain that a little bit?
Sure. You know, this is the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception really holds a special place in the history and the life of American Catholicism because, first of all, it's dedicated, this place of worship, of prayer, of pilgrimage, is dedicated to the Mother of God under her title of the Immaculate Conception. And with that really comes the prayers and the devotion and the hopes and the entrusting of so many people to the Mother of God, who is our mother in faith, the mother of the church. And so in many ways, this is America's sort of church, if you will. It's the church of every a Catholic in America. You know, we have all belong to our parish churches, and we love those churches. But this place really holds a special place in I think, the hearts and imaginations of Catholics from around the country, where they can come here and pray, bring their hopes and their fears and their worries and their troubles, and place it in the hands of the Mother of God, their mother, our mother in faith.
And, of course, the important and significant place that the Immaculate Conception has held in American history, in American Catholic history. I mean, devotion to the Immaculate Conception predates, in fact, the official proclamation of the dogma. Is that correct?
That's right. And you're a historian, so you probably have a really good sense of that, a better sense than I have. But, yes, this devotion to the Immaculate Conception, the Blessed Virgin Mary under her title of the Immaculate Conception, really has a long history in the Catholicism in the United States. And so it's only fitting that she is the patroness of the United States, the Blessed Mother under her title of the Immaculate Conception, and that she's always, as she does, for the whole church, but she's always leading us to her Son, and her Son is leading us to the Father in the power of the Holy Spirit. And that's really what this Trinity Dome mosaic captures so beautifully, visually and in radiant color and splendor of, you know, gold mosaic. It really shows us the path of the Christian life.
Mm-hmm. And the visualization of a mosaic like this, how did the idea first develop to festoon to beautify a dome like this with a mosaic of such ambition?
Sure. You know, actually, from what I've read and understood and spoken to people who are closely involved with the project, the original iconographic scheme or design, if you will, really dates back all the way to 1920, when the Basilica, the plans were first being set forth for this magnificent basilica right here in the nation's capital. And they really had a sense for what they wanted to see in each of the domes that were being built in the great upper church. And the crowning glory, if you will, of all of the domes is the Trinity Dome mosaic now that we have completed and dedicated, is really is to show that the Trinity, the most holy Trinity, is the beginning and the end of the Christian life, and that Mary is part of that journey of the Christian life. You know, we are baptized in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. So right at the beginning of our journey of faith is the Holy Trinity. And at the end of our journey of faith into eternity is the Holy Trinity, with Mary leading us as our guide on this pilgrim way. So this was envisioned, you know, right at the beginning when this basilica came to be. So it's really a marvelous 100 years in the making, if you will, that is now coming to completion.
Yeah, and walk us through the imagery of this. You mentioned that here we have salvation history playing out in this mosaic, but how does that fit so perfectly into the visual ambitions of the rest of the basilica?
Sure, sure. You know, I'll just describe just what a pilgrim would see, really, as they come into the main part of the basilica now and look up into the dome, the Trinity Dome mosaic. There are four pendentives, or, you know, sort of columns at the base of the Trinity Dome mosaic that depicts the four evangelists, St. Matthew, St. Mark, St. Luke, St. John. And here, this is so marvelous because it's really telling us that our faith rests on the faith of the apostles, that we say in the words of the Creed, I believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church. And so that sense of the apostolic faith on which everything rests, our faith and the faith of the church rests, is visually depicted in these four pendentives. Then you have at the circle of the base of the encircling the base of the dome is the words of the entire Nicene Creed, and that's hard to imagine. You know, when you say the words of the Creed each Sunday at Mass, that's a lot of words. But every single word of the Nicene Creed is in beautiful mosaic now, encircling the base of the dome of the Trinity Dome mosaic in the brilliant mosaic. And then as one looks further up, you see the figures of God the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit in the form of a dove. And then across from them is the Blessed Mother of God, looking out over all the pilgrims who gather and pointing us always to her beloved Son.
And of course,
and then above that, and then around that, we see a procession of saints and angels, these holy men and women taken from all, you know, times, moments in time, but who are somehow connected to faith in America, these men and women who are now, again, inviting us and guiding us on our journey of faith.
Mm-hmm. Where can people learn a lot more about this beautiful art? Because not everyone's going to have the opportunity to come for a visit to the basilica.
Sure. You know, and that's a great question. And I really would invite your listeners to just take a moment to go to the basilica's website. And they have a website for the Trinity Dome mosaic, and you just get a glimpse of some of the beautiful mosaics, just stunning mosaics that really are reminding us of what the Christian life is all about, what our faith is about, and just that invitation to let the Mother of God be our mother in faith, and to let her guide us to her Son.
Mm-hmm. And I know all of us are looking forward to reading more of what you have to say about the beautiful mosaic as well as Catholic art. Where can people find out more specifically about you?
Oh, thank you, Dr. Bunsen. Yes, you know, I write for Magnificat, for example, if you're familiar with that. resource. I write art essays in the Magnificat, and I also write in other, different places on sacred art and the beauty of images as they lead us on our pilgrim way. Perhaps that's where viewers could, listeners can get a chance to read some of those materials.
Well, we'll have to leave it there. But Dr. Sullivan, I'm very grateful for your time and encourage everyone to take their time to study this mosaic. It's well worth it.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bunsen.
Jem's column, Majestic Mosaic, can be found at ncregister.com, along with more news, analysis, and commentary at National Catholic Register. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, have a happy Advent.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.